What is going on? Happy June. Thanks for tuning in to the MMA podcast, June 6th, 2019. We got a lot to break down. UFC Stockholm was this past weekend. We got a PFL card tonight. We got a huge card in Chicago going down this weekend. Two belts on the line at UFC 238 as Henry Cejudo looks to take on Marlon Moraes for the bantamweight title. And Valentina Shevchenko takes on Jessica Ai for the World Women's Flyweight Championship. And another sort of special event for this podcast itself, June 6th was also the date of our very first podcast. Myself and Chris Lowe, shout out to C. Lowenstein on Twitter, and we actually will get him on one of these podcasts here when the schedule works out. He's a busy man. He's a working man, and the schedules don't always line up, especially when you consider all of us are in different time zones. I'm 3 hours ahead of those fools in California, but we will have him on soon to break down some cards. Shout out to Chris. Shout out, of course, to Ramses, and that's who this episode is dedicated to. Our boy, we lost him last summer, but he's still in our hearts, and we all still think about you and talk about you regularly. We miss the hell out of you, Ramses. And, of course, joined with the current era host, your boy, you know him as Sweet Pappy Jones. P Money also over there in Cali, like the OG Chris Lowe. But you are a little bit deeper in from the coast in those Cali deserts, breaking down the fights. We have a exciting episode just with all the stuff we have to talk about. But Pat, thanks, and we're here. We are celebrating 7 years. It's flown by, 250-something episodes. And, yeah, I'm glad you've been here the last few years and we've been able to bring it to the people.
Big Jake, what an amazing day this June 6th is. Thank you so much for having me on here. You know, as you mentioned, CeeLo and you guys, you and CeeLo popped this off 7 years ago today. I remember many years ago, around that same time, I was doing MMA Mental with my boy Ray from the UK. Shouts out to Ray and Jay from the UK. Jay also associated with MMA Mental at the time. And I remember we were talking, and I remember when you had said, oh, man, I got the or actually, it might have been Ray who told me that you had gotten the MMA podcast domain. And I said, no way. That's a killer domain, killer name. It's going to be popping off. And you know, we were collabing, doing the MMA Mental and MMA podcast roundtables. You guys had brought Ramses into the fold for the roundtables. I think that was a lot of our introduction to Ramses. Rest in peace, Ramses. As Jake, you had mentioned, always thinking about Ramses every day. Coming up on a year here, I believe it was August. Man, always checking out old word on the street clips. Shouts out to our boy. Rest in peace. But man, you know, it's been great. I think 2015 was when you brought me into the fold here, and as semi-regular co-host duties. And man, it's been fun every week, every time we get to do a podcast. It's always great breaking it down with you, my man. And this 7 year spectacular episode is going to be no different. Definitely got a whole slate of good stuff to talk about, man. Honored to be here with you for this anniversary episode, and looking forward to another great year, brother.
Yeah, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much. It's been an awesome 7 years, but you know, I'm just really thankful for you, Ramses, Chris, and everyone else who there were a lot of people who made this podcast what it was. All the fighters, all the coaches, all the guests we've had on, and just all the friends we've made along the way. Some friends, you know, I can call some of my best friends in the world, from, you know, you, Chris, Alan, Jay, Yao, Ray, Hunter, Ross, everyone we've met along the way. Just a lot of good memories made, a lot of fun times had. Davey Boy, Jen from Florida, Mystery Meds, all of the folks who tweet us, comment on YouTube. They've all been a big part of it, just with all everything that's made up the last 7 years. And you know what? I honestly hope 7 years down the line we are celebrating number 14 and still trucking along. Without jerking ourselves off too much, though, let's get to the mixed martial arts. This past weekend, UFC Stockholm, a lot of fun fights on that one. Of course, I X'd out of that page in typical TMP fashion. Here we go. We had the prelims on ESPN2, the main card on ESPN Plus, the same format actually they'll be doing tonight for PFL. That prelim card starts at 7 and the main card starts at 9. So if you are listening to this the day we drop it, make sure you tune in. 5 fun, action-packed hours of light heavyweight and heavyweight action. PFL 3 on ESPN 2 and ESPN Plus. I sound like I'm getting paid for this, but I'm not. Or am I? UFC Stockholm, we had the prelim starting on ESPN 2. A few notable fights there. Lena Landsberg defeating Tanya Evinger. Big upset win there for Landsberg, winning pretty decidedly 30-26, 30-27, 30-26. Frank Camacho and Leonardo Santos with big KO punches to end their fights in the second and first round, respectively, against Nick Hine and Stevie Ray. Devin Clark scoring unanimous decision victory. Sergey Kendozko defeating Rostam Akman via unanimous decision. Then going up to the main card, Daniel Tamer and Christos Giagos winning unanimous decisions. Makwan Amirakani getting back in the win column at 145, getting an Anaconda choke sub in the second round against Chris Fishgold. And what was the KO of the night? He got $50,000 for it. Along with Makwan Amirakani, Anthony Smith, and Leonardo Santos. Just a head kick from the gods. I heard Jimmy Manoa's head landed somewhere across the sea in Finland. It was a maybe the head kick KO of the year so far. Just absolutely brutalized him. 47 seconds in, Manoa announced his retirement after the fights. So a nice career for Manoa, the poster boy. Always, you know, was always a very decent fighter. Never got up to championship status. Was kind of that that quintessential top 10 gatekeeper. Losing to Alexander Rachik, who not many of us knew of before this fight, and definitely put himself on the map. We'll probably see him in the rankings soon. And like I've been talking about, as a part of this new crop of 205ers in a division that really, really needed some new talent and had way too many guys in their late 30s and 40s in it. And it's nice to see some burgeoning talent there at light heavyweight. Before we get to another fight at 205, any thoughts on the rest of the card before we get to Smith versus Gustafsson?
Yeah, it was certainly a fun card in Sweden this past weekend. Action from start to finish. Joel Alvarez got the show started with a TKO over Danilo Beluardo. And then the action just kept on coming. Devin Clark got a decision over Darko Stosic. Bia Malecki got a rear naked choke submission in the second round over Duda Santana. Frank Camacho and Leonardo Santos. Jake, as you mentioned, with KOs over Nick Hine and Stevie Ray, respectively. The big upset, Lena Landsberg over Tanya Evinger. I thought old Gator was going to have that one, but the elbow queen came through. Sergey Kondosko getting the decision over Rostam Akman. Great fight between Daniel Tamer and Sunbin Jo. Sunbin Jo, big prospect from South Korea. Daniel Tamer, he was at the height, reach, and age disadvantage, but great fight, great striking display there. Nice victory for him. Christos Giagos, great fight over Demir Hadzevic. Makwan Amirakani, good to see him get back in the win column. Mr. Finland, great submission over Fishgold that round two, Anaconda. And yeah, Rakic, getting the head kick KO over Jenny Manua. Man, that was brutal. Didn't take a whole lot of time, and that was just shin to chin. It was very brutal. I'm glad Jimmy Manua is okay. We're really lucky. You know, it's so crazy that we have certain strikes that are disallowed, because when you can kick a person right in the chin, I mean, really at any point, I mean, we're so lucky that there aren't more really serious injuries that have come from that. I know that there's only been, at least my one recollection, the head kick of Rashad Evans over Sean Salmon. That did break Sean Salmon's neck. He did come back and fight in the UFC after that. And I know Rich Franklin, I believe he broke Nate Quarry's neck when he knocked him out. That was due to a punch, but I mean, it's a good thing we don't have more serious injuries more often. That was a scary knockout. Great win for Rakic. Sad for Manoa to go out like that, but it was a good career from him. He brought us a lot of entertaining fights, win, lose, or draw. So thank you, Jimmy Manoa, for the entertainment over the years.
I always think back to an event I went to back when I lived in Denver, RFA 11, back November 2013, Chinzo Machida versus Brian Wood. It wasn't the main event, but it was on the main card. Chinzo Machida just delivers a flying knee. If I remember correctly, it was a flying knee. I just had it hits Wood in the face. Wood goes out, gets stretchered out. You find out after the fact, he didn't only break his jaw and lose a bunch of teeth, but he like broke stuff up in like his sinuses. He broke the bones that make up the top of the roof of your mouth.
Ooh, and the palate?
The palate. He broke bones in his palate. He basically, yeah, I mean, and that's, I mean, you're talking not just, I mean, you know, when you do stuff like mess up a knee or break or, you know, tear your Achilles, that's extensive damage. But when you're talking about breaking like stuff in your sinuses and your palate, you're talking about like craniofacial reconstructive surgery, just so like your skull works correctly the rest of your life. Like, it was one of the most devastating injuries I've ever seen. And, you know, we are lucky, you know, you're right, that we don't see anything like that. I think the sport is lucky, you know. We've seen it in boxing, fighters, you know, getting injured real bad or worse. So, you know, not to jinx the sport or anything, but in what is a really, really brutal sport, I mean, you're right, that Rakic, however the fuck you pronounce his name, he booted Jimmy Manoa's head into outer space. Manoa losing on the co-main event, announcing his retirement. Alexander Gustafsson following suit, even though I think Manoa retired after Gustafsson, because Gus retired literally inside the cage, took his gloves off and laid him down. But after a fight that Gus honestly was not doing bad in, I thought Gus, if it had been a 3-round fight, I think Gustafsson probably wins that fight 2-1. I mean, Smith had a good first round, but in the second and third round, I remember his corner getting kind of desperate, because Gus was definitely putting out more and landing a lot, even though Smith did catch him with one kick that it looked like it was just a superficial wound at first, but as much blood as his shin squirted out, you saw he actually busted Alexander's shin open. But it was a fight that Gus was not doing too bad in, but come the fourth round, just got caught in a bad spot, and Lionheart was able to take advantage, sink in the rear naked choke with 2:38 left in the fourth round, leaving Alexander Gustafsson, who he is Mount Rushmore of one of the greatest fighters of all time who never won a belt. And, you know, you think about how close he came to beating Jon Jones, how close he came in that decision loss to Daniel Cormier. And this is a Jon Jones and a Daniel Cormier who, I mean, you really could make the argument that Jones and Cormier are the number one and number two greatest fighters of all time. Just in what they've done on their records, as dominant as they've been in their title runs. And Gus probably was the closest one to ever take the belt away from either guy. Jones in that, I mean, that fight against that first fight between Jones and Gus at UFC 165 is an all-timer. And so is the title fight between DC and Gus. You know, it's almost like a Charles Barkley type spot. I think I remember hearing Ariel Helwani making that comparison after the fight. You know, Gus is one of these guys who had the talent, and you put him in virtually any other era, he's not only a champ, but he's a great champ. But, you know, the guys he had to go up against to take the belt from were the greatest. And, you know, Gus will never get the historic due he's owed because he never held the belt. I hope he comes back. But, you know, we've seen fighters a lot of time make this decision on emotion. I saw a tweet joking saying, a fighter's first retirement. What a milestone. You know, not too long ago, Ben Askren retired, and now he's about to have his second fight in the UFC next month. So I hope he does come back. But aside from the retirement talk, a good fight. I think Anthony Smith said on a recent interview that he felt like he was being overlooked with all this retirement talk. And I think he's right. I mean, everyone's talking about Gustafson retiring, and Smith's over here like, hello, I just beat Anthony Gustafson. Anyone who does that usually gets like a title shot or a ton of praise, and everyone's just talking about the retirement. Hello. I don't know what's next for him, because you don't put him right back in a title shot. He just got throttled by the champ. Luke Rockhold might make sense. There's a lot of bad blood there. Smith is relatively new for the division, too, so other than Thiago Santos, there aren't many other contenders that he's fought, so you could line him up against a lot of guys who he hasn't faced in the past. But I think Luke Rockhold, just with all the bad blood, is the likely next opponent. The fight won't be for a while there. He says he wants to take time off with his family, and I think a recent x-ray came out and his hand is all jacked up. He's going to need 6 months to recover. How convenient. So we'll probably see Lionheart back in 2020, and big submission win for him. What did you think of the fight? What do you make of the retirement by the best mixed martial artist of all time to come from Sweden?
Well, it was a great performance from Anthony Smith. You know, we talked about this a little bit before the fight had gone on. We were talking about the odds and things like that. And I said, man, Anthony Smith, I think he was like plus 200 or maybe even like plus 280 to Alex Gustafson. And I said, man, you know, I think he's got a real legitimate shot. I mean, Anthony Smith in his fight against Jon Jones, the first couple rounds, at least, my recollection may be a little hazy, but I seem to recall Anthony Smith actually having some good exchanges with Jon Jones on the feet. It wasn't a one-sided stomping the whole route. I mean, Anthony Smith, first of all, was able to go to the decision with Jon Jones in a 25-minute fight, which not a lot of people have been able to do. Not a lot of people able to go 15 minutes with Jon Jones. And he did show me some good things in that fight. So I was feeling like his stock didn't drop a whole lot off of that fight. And Alexander Gustafson, you know, even though he himself was coming into this fight, you know, off of a loss against Jon Jones, he had been a little more up and down as of late. So I kind of thought Anthony Smith's stock was rising and Gus was on a slight decline. And, you know, Jake, as you mentioned, started off well enough for Gustafson. It certainly seemed, you know, I thought he had rounds two and three as well. But Anthony Smith, man, able to come in like a thief in the night and take the W from Gustafson in his hometown. Submits him, fourth round, rear naked choke. I mean, Gustafson, I was a big fan of his for some time. He showed great striking ever since he came on. And after his loss to Phil Davis, he and Phil Davis started training together. And they both really helped each other's game. And Phil Davis really helped Gustafson get his ground game going. And, you know, some of Gustafson's best fights and best performances and the best stretch of his career lied after that fight. And as you mentioned, I mean, absolutely some of the hardest fights. I mean, of course, you know, John Jones beat Daniel Cormier twice. No question about that. But aside from those fights, you know, and of course, those John Jones, I want to say, may or may not have popped hot for one or both of those fights. But Alexander Gustafson, absolutely, at least off the top of my head, gave Daniel Cormier his hardest fight besides from John Jones. And the same thing you could say with Alex Gustafson versus John Jones. Who gave John Jones a tougher fight than their first fight together? Nobody put it on John Jones like that. So Alex definitely, in a different era, could have, you know, he could have been the man, could have been the contender. But, you know, in this universe, in this timeline, it was, you know, Daniel Cormier and John Jones sharing that belt. Gustafson so close. Could beat just about anybody aside from them and Rumble Johnson. But it was a great career, great performances from Gustafson. He definitely put it all out there. Never was in a boring fight. And salute for all your efforts and all your contributions to the UFC.
Big salute to the Mauler, who also, he's retiring at age 32, who also had has one of the coolest tattoos in MMA on his right arm. He has that sort of tribal thing where he has a triangle for each fight, and it's filled in for a win, and it's left empty for a loss. And he does have a few losses on there. He has a couple fights that are half filled in, the Jones fight and the Cormier fight, the fights that he felt... He put forth a impressive enough performance to fill it in at least halfway. But I always thought that those are real cool tattoo. Getting to the news, you know, for as busy as we've been with events, we were in Stockholm last weekend. We're doing PFL tonight, Chicago this Saturday. There was not that much news, a lot of sort of pre-fight hype building up for UFC 238, but not too much news. Probably the big set of news was that Dustin Poirier and Khabib Nurmagomedov, pardon me, were official for UFC Abu Dhabi. I believe that will be UFC 241. No, UFC 241 is in Anaheim. UFC 242 is September 7th in Abu Dhabi, Khabib versus Poirier. And, you know, it's, I'm glad this fight is going down, but it, I don't know, it feels a little silly just in the fact that the Nevada Athletic Commission reduced two of Khabib's friends' suspensions by 35 days to make it just line up so his friends could fight on the card, so Khabib would fight on the card, so they'd make a bunch of money off of this card. You know, it isn't even, I mean, you know, it isn't even like they're trying to draw the shade over our eyes these days. It's just blatant, and I won't dwell on that because it's something you've gotten used to now, just the blatant collusion between the UFC and these athletic commissions. But, hey, you know, whatever we need to do to make this fight happen, I guess. Yeah, it's going down in Abu Dhabi. I will be rooting for the American, of course, Dustin Poirier. As he does even have some local ties with a good friend of the show, the Westland Eagle, Alan, I'm sure will be going nuts for him. Khabib has almost turned into somewhat of a heel character like Connor. You know, when Connor won the belt and all of a sudden it seemed like he wasn't really as much about fighting as he was stunning on Instagram and showing off the shoes he has and talking about competing in other sports. Connor's shtick kind of got old, and, you know, I don't know if Habib, his own personal shtick, has gotten old, but, man, his mouthpiece, Ali Abdelaziz, I could use less of him, because every time he's going on, you know, Ariel's show, Luke Thomas's show, in any of these places, the guy you can just tell is, you know, I won't hold back. You can tell the guy's an absolute scumbag, and he doesn't make it any easier to root for Habib. I'll leave it there. So that said, it's hard not to pick Habib in this fight. I mean, guy's undefeated. Not only is he undefeated, he is absolutely just torn through everybody, whether it's the champion or his first fights leading up to contendership in the UFC. The guy is a F5 tornado. He is going to demolish whatever is in his path and do it the same way, just with that ferocious takedown offense. I mean, that Dagestani, that Russian wrestling base is really, really hard to defend against unless you are, you know, Olympic or at least a very, very elite level wrestler. And even then, you know, it's hard to defend against the tenacity of Nurmagomedov, and once he gets you down, just suffocating top control and absolutely brutal ground and pound. You know, he's finished, I think, most of his last opponents, and I can look, yeah, just a lot of ground and pound victories recently versus ooh, yeah, that neck crank against Connor. Yeah, just an absolute, yeah, he's 27-0, and Dustin has looked great. I picked against him versus Max, and he proved me wrong. He could very well prove me wrong again, but Habib, skill-wise, might be the best pound-for-pound fighter in the UFC right now, so it's tough to lean any other direction. Are you sort of still feeling the same vibe, or are you a little more optimistic for Dustin?
I mean, my optimism has grown for Dustin. I feel like I've doubted him a few times since he's moved up to 155. And by and large, he has met or exceeded my expectations. He's really been on a tear himself. But, I mean, Habib, the way he's going, it's just, he's got everything going for him. I mean, he's looked good standing. He dropped Conor McGregor. He was able to, you know, go toe-to-toe for a couple rounds with Al Iaquinta. Although Iaquinta did pretty good there, I think how most of us had previously viewed Habib's stand-up prowess, I feel like Habib's looking even better in that respect. He seems to be growing and evolving. Endless cardio. I mean, the guy seems like he can just, you know, keep up that same pace for forever, which is definitely a hallmark of a lot of the greats and a lot of the tops at the sports. If you have that endless gas tank, I mean, that's going to help you. I mean, duh. But, gee whiz, I think Habib, I mean, smart money's on Habib in this one. I mean, it has to be. For myself, he's got, I mean, we've never seen him in trouble. It's very rare that we've ever seen him in trouble. I do feel like he lost the fight against Gleison Tibau. I don't know how many times I keep talking about that fight, but that wasn't like a blowout. That was a chess match, a very close chess match between two guys with super similar skill sets, both very strong grapplers, incredibly strong grapplers at 155, and who both had a decent stand-up. But Tibau's was definitely better. Tibau should have won that fight, but this is a... I don't know. And now Dustin Poirier, he has great submissions. He's got great submission attacks. He's finished lots of people lots of different ways. But as far as the wrestling pressure, he doesn't want any part of the wrestling game with Habib. So he's not going to be able to control the octagon in a similar way that, say, Gleason was able to against him, or in a way that a lot of guys with that slick wrestling background can't. His subs are basically going to be left as a defense for him against the super slick Habib ground and pound. I don't know, though. I mean, even Conor McGregor, though, who someone I think we all pretty much universally discounted his grappling abilities, was able to at least fend off the takedown and get up repeatedly against Habib, I mean, until his gas tank ran out. So, oof, I don't know. This is going to be a tough fight. Again, I think if you would have asked me 6 months ago how this fight goes, it wouldn't even have been any kind of question. I'd say Habib, all day, big time stomping, no chance for Dustin. Nowadays, I'm thinking 70% Habib, 30% Dustin. I think Dustin definitely has the chance. He's bigger and stronger at 155. And man, he's got those hands. He's been putting a lot of people down with those. But I think smart money's on Habib. Right now, I'm thinking that's the way I'm leaning.
Yeah, I'm looking here at the opening lines. Habib actually opening up as a pretty big favorite, minus 450 with the underdog Poirier at plus 350 for their fight in Abu Dhabi, where I'm sure there will be a lot of Nurmagomedov fans in the crowd. Just another couple topics. PFL 14 tonight. Once again, if you want to tune into ESPN Plus, a lot of fun fights of Vinny Magalhaes versus some dude, Kelvin Tiller versus some dude, Satoshi Ishii versus some dude, Jared Rosholt versus some dude, Hani Marks versus some dude. None of these guys have their own Wikipedia page. So once you get your own Wikipedia page, you will graduate past the status of just being some dude. But until then, you're just some dude. Gonna go to UFC 238 this Saturday, Chicago. A lot of fun fights to break down, especially on the main card, but we won't get ahead of ourselves. We always start with the prelims. The early prelims have Xianan Yan versus Angela Hill, Bevon Lewis versus Darren Stewart, Eddie Wineland, a familiar face, taking on Gregory Popoff, and Caitlin Chookagan taking on Joanne Calderwood. This will be, we haven't seen Eddie Wineland in about a year, and before then it was another year. He lost both of those fights versus John Dodson and Alejandro Perez via unanimous decisions. Speaking of our 7th year anniversary, Wineland was one of the first guys we had on back way back in 2012. So, shout out to our boy, who I guess back then, yeah, he was fighting guys like Joseph Benavidez, Scott Jorgensen, and has put in a ton more UFC work in the last 7 years. Should be fun to see him put in work. Any thoughts on the early prelims?
I'm thinking it should be a fun card overall. It's nothing really popping out overall, but man, it's just it's been making for some fun Thursdays, having that PFL keeping us entertained. Shouts out to Eddie Wineland, one of my favorite bantamweights. Big hands there. I'd say that's probably my standout.
Yeah, we also have a women's flyweight fight between Caitlin Chookagian and Joanne Calderwood. It's nice seeing that 125-pound division accumulate some more talent. The prelims on ESPN, this is maybe the most stacked prelim card I've seen for a pay-per-view in a long time. Check out these four fights, and I'll go from the bottom to the top. We start between Ricardo Lamas and Calvin Kattar. Lamas has, for a long time, been in the top five of that division. Hasn't ever held the belt, but talk about like an elite top five gatekeeper. He does not have a lot of guys who defeat him, and those who do usually go on to at least fight for a title. Calvin Kattar coming up from the New England area. Actually, our boy Mike Hammersmith told me to keep my eye on him a while back, and he's been doing very well in the UFC. The next fight, Carolina Kowalkiewicz against versus Alexa Grasso. This is a huge fight as far as the women's strawweight division goes. We know Kowalkiewicz has fought for the strap before, lost her last two fights to Jessica Andrade and Michelle Waterson, but she has such clout in that 115 division that both of those girls might have gotten a title shot off of that win. You had Andrade, who just got the title shot and got the title. And you have Michelle Waterson, who might be next in line to fight for that 115 belt. I'm not sure who is going to get the call. It might be Rose. It might be Waterson. It might be a slew of other strawweights. But the Karate Hottie is definitely in the mix as far as the title picture goes right now. She's going to be taking on Alexa Grasso, who also had a lot of hype behind her, took a couple of losses, lost to Felice Herrig, beat Randa Markos via split decision, but in her last fight, lost to Tatiana Suarez via rear naked choke. She's trying to get back in it. A bantamweight fight between Aljamain Sterling and Pedro Munhoz. This is another real interesting one. These are two top 10 bantamweights, and this could have some title implications as well. You had Sterling, who in his last six fights, his only loss is that devastating knee knockout to Marlon Moraes. He's put in three wins since defeating Brett Johns, Cody Stamann, and Jimmy Rivera. A win here could put him into a title fight, and the same goes for his opponent, Pedro Munhoz, who just got done knocking out Cody Garbrandt at UFC 235, also on a three-fight winning streak, defeating Brian Caraway and Brett Johns. So the winner of this fight is going to be in the mix, certainly, for the next shot at bantamweight, and we have the bantamweight strap on the line in the main event of this card between Henry Cejudo and Marlon Moraes. So for sure you want to keep an eye on this fight. And to put the icing on the cake for these prelims, Tatiana Suarez taking on Nina Ansaroff at women's 115. Suarez along with the women I mentioned before, with a win here, could toss her name in the hat for a title shot. And so could Nina Ansaroff, even though she is a underdog here, going on against a Tatiana Suarez, who has a ton of hype behind her. Let's not forget that Ansaroff was a big underdog against Claudia Gadelha last December and won a pretty decided unanimous decision against her. So Nina, she doesn't talk much. She, even though she is oftentimes in the spotlight with Amanda Nunes, you don't always hear too much from her, and she's making waves for herself at strawweight. That would be something if both her and Nunes could hold belts at the same time. But she will definitely have another chance to make even more waves taking on Tatiana Suarez. Those four fights, I mean, talk about a stacked prelim card. Pat, any thoughts before we get up to the main card?
Yeah, you know what? I'm very excited for this fight card coming up on Saturday. Double title fight and lots of compelling fights right from the jump. I mean, as you mentioned, Calderwood and Chukagian, Wineland and Popov, Bevan Lewis versus Darren the Dentist Stewart, Angela Overkill Hill versus Xiaonan Yan. I mean, Ricardo Lamas versus Calvin Cutter, Alexa Grasso, Carolina Kowalkiewicz, Pedro Munhoz, Aljamain Sterling, Tatiana Suarez versus Nina Ansaroff. Man, it is going to be, and those are just the prelims. I mean, that's better than a lot of main cards that are being put out these days. Very much looking forward to that. Aljamain Sterling versus Pedro Munhoz. You could swap that out with Suarez versus Ansaroff. Both of those fights, very very big and very impactful for their respective divisions. Going to be some very great fights. I mean, I feel like I got to go with Suarez in this one. She's a pretty big She's a pretty big favorite over Nina Ansaroff.
Minus 900.
But, you know, if you want to throw a little change on Ansaroff, I mean, having anybody at that big of a disadvantage in MMA, especially with the run Ansaroff's been on, I mean, she just beat Claudia Cattaglia. She beat Randa Marcos. She beat Angela Hill. She's on a four-fight winning streak, at least right now. She's been doing well, and Claudia Cattaglia, certainly no slouch. I mean, Tatiana Suarez, she has been looking next level, though, with her wrestling. I don't know. I think she's a rightful favorite, but in those numbers, maybe a bit much. Aljo versus Munoz, crazy good fight. That one's going to be a coin flip right there. I don't even know how I'm looking in that one. I think I probably got to go with Aljo. You know, got to back our guy there. But
Aljo, a slight favorite in Vegas, minus 135.
Just a scotch, the favorite. You know, Alexa Grasso, I kind of like Grasso over Kapalkovitz. Call me crazy. Carolina's been a little bit up and down. Grasso herself, but for whatever reason, I'm feeling Grasso in this one. I think she's a very slight dog to Carolina in that one. But
yeah, man, it's almost even odds in that.
Yeah, great scraps on the undercard. Man, it's going to be a stacked Saturday, boy.
And we get up to the main card. Tai Tuivasa, a slight favorite, versus Blagoy Ivanov. Peter Yan, a more sizable favorite, minus 325, taking on Jimmy Rivera, who I know Rivera hasn't, he had a lot of hype behind him that got slowed down recently, but I think he has a little bit more chance to take out Peter Yan than this plus 265 line they're putting out. I've seen Jimmy Rivera look like an absolute killer. Any thoughts on those two fights before we get to the three fights that everyone's really looking forward to?
Yeah, Tuivasa versus Ivanov, a great heavyweight scrap. Both those guys are definitely bangers. Should be a fun fight no matter what. Don't really have a dog in that fight. I'm just looking forward to a good heavyweight scrap. I feel like it's a rarity these days, but oh man, Peter Yan versus Jimmy Rivera. Peter Yan trying to go 5-0 in the UFC in his first year. I don't know if this fight will technically be at a year mark since his debut. I got to double check. I know he made his debut June 2018 when he got a victory over Taruto Ishihara. But, Yan has a lot of momentum going into this one, and rightfully so. I mean, Peter Yan is looking like a beast for sure. He's looking like he can get it done everywhere. But Jimmy Rivera, very much the same thing. Super strong, great wrestler, great striker. These guys both really put it together very well. I would say both similar in their skill sets, more boxer wrestlers. I don't recall seeing a lot of kicks coming from either guy, at least, you know, body and head kicks, things like that. So I feel like this fight's going to be close for sure. I think Rivera's a good dog to throw a couple coins on. Peter Yan's a beast, but man, that's going to be a super scrap at 135.
And you want to talk super scrap? Look no further than the People's Main Event at lightweight. Tony Ferguson riding a insane win streak. I believe right now he has won 11 in a row, taking on Donald Cerrone, who there might not be a hotter stock right now at 155. After giving birth to his kid, has been a man on a mission, defeating Mike Perry, Alexander Hernandez, and Al Iaquinta. Three wins in a row, three tough wins in a row, three underdog wins in a row, and he is an underdog again, taking on El Cucuy. This man, I change my mind on this every 10 seconds, I feel like. So, Pat, do you want to break it down before I change my mind again?
You know what, Jake? Yes, I do. And this fight is a very, very tough one. But for myself, I'm just going to go right out and say it. Donald Cowboy Cerrone is winning this fight. And it is going to be the stand-up that is going to get it done. Both of these guys, again, super similar. Both guys are great everywhere. Great submissions, great striking, very Tony Ferguson, maybe a little more unorthodox than Donald Cerrone, but Donald Cerrone still has a very wide and varied toolbox. He's got a lot of different things he can hit you with, just like Tony Ferguson. I just feel like Donald Cerrone is a little bit cleaner with his strikes. I feel like they're both savages. They're both absolute beasts. But as far as just the accuracy, maybe the tightness, I feel like Cerrone's just got a little bit more of the accuracy and the tightness. And I think that is going to be the difference. Both guys super crafty on the ground. I think Donald Cerrone, you know, when he first got in the UFC, was really showing off the submission skills. I mean, he didn't even have a TKO victory when coming into the UFC, if I'm not mistaken. Just started racking up all the TKOs in the UFC. He would always drop people and then sub them. But then in the UFC, he finally started getting the finishes and just started rocking people. And I think this is it, man. I think Cerrone's time has come. I almost hope I'm wrong for Ferguson's sake, just because if he goes 11-0 or 12-0 or whatever he's at right now and doesn't get the title shot, my God, that would just be insane. I mean, certainly through no fault of the UFC's booking, they try to make that fight happen so many times. But I'm seeing it for Cowboy right now. Jake, call me crazy.
Man, you crazy. But I do, man, I don't know. As much as I want to jump in the same bandwagon and pick Cowboy Cerrone, which he is more of a live dog than a lot of people think. I've talked to a lot of pretty knowledgeable heads in the sport who think that Ferguson is just going to buzz through him. But when you stylistically think about the fight, you know, Cowboy is a veteran. And for Ferguson is, you know, he does have his tricks, but Cowboy, I've always said since day one, has a giant toolbox, and he's not going to get really exposed standing up. He's not really going to get exposed on the ground. He's got fantastic groundwork, and he's not going to be able to, Ferguson's not going to make him look like a scrub like a lot of opponents have. I think it's going to be close. I'm going to be rooting for my boy, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, but if for no other reason than to play devil's advocate, you got Tony Ferguson, who, you know, a lot of people think stylistically could give Habib a lot of problems. This is a guy who was matched up against him 4 times, and the fight never came through. It's a fight that I asked in the beginning of 2019, what fight do you want to see the most? Resoundingly, the answer I got was Tony Ferguson versus Habib Nurmagomedov. Hopefully we see that fight down the road. And Tony is a guy who has pieced together 11 fights. You don't do that in the UFC by accident. I think there is a very small list of people who have been able to string off double-digit wins, and Tony's been doing it against elite competition. So, man, Cowboy is on a tear, and like I said, he's a live dog. It would not shock me in the least if Donald Cowboy Cerrone won this fight. But like I said, I am going to feel like such a dum-dum if Cerrone wins this and I picked against him. But I'll use that excuse that I'm only playing devil's advocate. I'll go with Tony Ferguson here. Which brings us to the co-main event. Valentina Shevchenko taking on Jessica Eye. This is historic if for no other reason than Shevchenko has insane odds on Jessica Eye. Last I checked, Shevchenko was something like -1375, and Eye was +900. Meaning, for those of you who aren't degenerate gamblers, in order to make $100, say I want to go to Vegas and I want to put a bet on Valentina Shevchenko that profits me $100, you have to bet $1,375. You have to bet 13, almost 14 times your profit to make that, because Las Vegas thinks she is that much of a lock to win. I don't think in fighting, I think it's very rare in fighting where you see somebody who's -1,000 or greater, and it really deserves to be so. I think Ronda Rousey probably deserved to be -1,000 against Bitch Kohea. She obviously didn't against Holly Holm, even though she was. I think she was only like -700. But this sport inherently is one of a lot of parity, and you can see somebody who is not the better fighter come in and win the fight. a la Matt Serra versus George St. Pierre. Pardon me. I'm coughing my ass off here on the 7th anniversary podcast. It's not professional, damn it. And I do apologize. But no, you know, like I was saying, upsets can go down in this sport with frequency, and the fact that Jessica Ai is plus 900, am I going to bet on her? No, just because I'm broke at the moment and really just can't afford to throw money down the drain, which I feel like a bet against Valentina Shevchenko might be just that. But, man, it's a fight that Vegas says Valentina Shevchenko virtually has no chance of losing. And you can see why. She's put together an incredible resume since joining the UFC. Her only losses, razor-thin decisions against Amanda Nunes. That being said, Jessica Ai is a gamer. She's fighting at her natural weight class at 125. And I think she'll have a moment or two that has everyone a little nervous. But all in all, I think Valentina Shevchenko will march forward and win the co-main event.
Ooh, Jake, Valentina Shevchenko versus Jessica Ai. I'm very excited for this fight. Shevchenko, I think she's always had a lot of fan support behind her. Jessica Ai, kind of similarly, kind of a people's champion kind of situation. I've always really liked Jessica Ai, big fan of her fighting style. She's always put on entertaining scraps, and glad to see her get a title shot at the flyweight division. Went 3-0 in 2018, and, you know, Shevchenko, the women's 125-pound champion, beating Joanna Jędrzejczyk in her last fight. Man, this is going to be a great scrap. I feel like I need to double-check, but I want to say Jessica may have a little bit of the stature advantage. This is going to be quite a scrap. At least I feel like it is. Jessica, she may seem overmatched on paper, but I really think flyweight is her home. It seems like she's really found her weight here, and she's starting to put things together. She's going to need to put together a perfect fight against Valentina Shevchenko to come home with that belt this coming Saturday night, but I think she can do it. I think she can do it. She's crafty. I'm not saying that she's going to do it. I think I have to pick Shevchenko in this fight. I mean, I want to pick Jessica Ai. I think she can do it. Oh, man. You know, this is just going to be a really tough scrap. I think smart money's on Shevchenko, but I'm not sleeping on Ai. I think she'll make it a good scrap. And, hey, if she got it done and brought back that strap to the U.S., I would not be disappointed whatsoever.
And we move along to the main event. A pretty unusual main event. We don't have a current champion at bantamweight. That's because former champion TJ Dillashaw was forced to vacate his belt after failing a drug test for EPO. He's out for 2 years. So now 135 needs a champion. And we have the number one contender, Marlon Moraes, taking on the champion at 125, Henry Cejudo, who notably just came off with a win against the champion TJ Dillashaw, looking to become the champ, along with being an Olympic gold medalist, if you haven't heard him mention that yet. Yeah, this is going to be a real fun strap, you know? We've seen both of these guys take on opponents at elite level, but not necessarily with the kind of style. We haven't seen Henry Cejudo take on just a devastating striker like a Marlon Moraes. And I don't know if we've seen Marlon Moraes take on the guy with the wrestling chops like Henry Cejudo. It's going to be a 5-round fight. And, you know, I'm going back and forth on this, but Henry Cejudo just has been an absolute killer. Look at his last two fights. He's beaten two of the UFC's best. Marlon Moraes, you know, the odds, I think, on this fight are pretty even. This is another fight I would not be shocked either way. Marlon has a lot of first-round finishes under his belt. So if the longer the fight goes, I think I'd probably favor Henry Cejudo, even though Cejudo himself just had a quick knockout of TJ Dillashaw. This is another fight I'm going back and forth on. I might I might have switched my pick to Marlon by the time the fight comes, but for right now, I will say Henry Cejudo becomes the champ. The guy has just not only all the fundamentals that you expect from him, obviously a very powerful wrestling game, but he just knocked out TJ Dillashaw in what, 45 seconds. He's looked like a firecracker, and as annoying as the guy might come off, I think part of it is wanting to be a heel and wanting to get a little bit of attention from the fans. He knows what he's doing in effect, but I think another part of that is definitely his real personality. And I think he will be the champ for a little while. I don't think the flyweight division has much more time left in the UFC, especially considering how most of the flyweights that were in the UFC have now moved on to other organizations. And kind of, if you can read the tea leaves, I don't think it's going to be around for that much longer. We'll probably see the division close with Cejudo as the champ. But, it'll be interesting to see not only what goes down here, but like I said, that preliminary fight between Aljamain Sterling and Pedro Munhoz that might have title implications on the line. So pay attention to that too. Pat, that was a lot of hot air from me, but what do you think's going down in this main event between Henry Cejudo and the Brazilian Marlon Moraes?
Man, Henry Cejudo versus Marlon Moraes. This one for the undisputed 135-pound championship. It's unfortunate because of the circumstances with Dillashaw getting stripped, but Henry Cejudo has the chance to become the legit undisputed double champ. Marlon Moraes, who's just been starching people left and right, he's got a chance to become the legitimate 135-pound division champion. This is going to be a war. Marlon Moraes, I mean, my goodness, his striking, what more can you say? We've seen him end people violently. Kicks, knees, punches, anywhere you want. He's good to finish the fight. Submissions, he had a very close scrap with Rafael dos Anjos, got the rematch just this February. They ran it back, and Marlon Moraes made sure it was nowhere near as close as the first one. It was a decisive victory. He looks like he's just getting better and better. Both of these guys look like they're in stupid shape, freaking action figure shape, USADA flag-raising shape, blood doping shape. I'm sorry, I'm going in the wrong direction. These guys look like they're in really good shape, and this is going to be very likely 25 minutes of high-paced action. Oh my goodness, which way is it going to go, though? Man, this is going to be tough. I mean, Henry Cejudo, men's 135-pound gold medalist, the best man in the world at wrestling at 135 pounds. Can he get in there and take Moraes down? Can he keep him down? Can he avoid the subs? Can he get effective ground and pound off? It's going to be very interesting. I think this one is going to come down to the feet. And you know what? Dang it. Jake, Marlon Moraes is going to win this fight. I hate to say it. Henry Cejudo, the messenger, the American hero, the people's champion. I'm getting so worked up, I can barely contain myself. I want him to win this fight. I want him to be the double champ. I want him to be the double champ and the gold medalist, the best combat sports athlete to ever do it. But we're in this show for making picks, and I think Marlon Moraes is going to get it done. I hate to say it, but I think it's going to be... Magic Marlon Moraes' time. I hate to say it, Marlon Moraes, super entertaining former, ever since he was in the World Series of Fighting back in the day. But, I want to go with good old Cejudo, but, man, something telling me Moraes is going to get a big upset Saturday night and noon.
And that about does it. A stacked card in Chicago, including those two title fights we just broke down. Cannot wait to watch it. We'll be back next week to break it down. We appreciate you tuning in. The TMP 7th birthday extravaganza. Pat, anything for the people before we let them go?
Well, Jake, it's been fantastic. Always a pleasure doing the episode, even more so being the MMA podcast 7-year anniversary extravaganza. couldn't be more honored to have been on the show with you today and for the past couple of years. Thank you for always putting together a good show, for everything you do for the show. And God bless the listeners who keep us coming back. We do it for you guys. Thank you so much for always tuning in. And we love you guys. And stay safe. Keep that nose to the grindstone.
And just like that, it's been 7 years. We appreciate everyone who's been a part of the journey, all the friends we've made, all the fights we've broken down, all the fun we've had. It's been awesome. I can't wait for the next 7 years. Ramses, rest in peace, buddy. We love the shit out of you. Until next week, we'll break down UFC 238, serve up all sorts of hot takes and MMA goodness. We love you, and we'll see you then. Till then, we gone.